Welcome to the Chris Saylor Show. I'm Jerry Price, and I am joined by Princeton head women's lacrosse coach Chris Saylor. Chris, welcome back.
Thanks, Jerry. Great to be here.
So hopefully the sound is better this time. I figured out what we were doing wrong on the sound. So I connected all this stuff, which is kind of new for
That's
me.
That's helpful.
What I forgot to do is switch over the part where you're actually taking the sound from the mixer, and instead I was just taking the sound through the speakers on my computer. So since I'm sitting right next to my computer and you're across the table, or previously Matt Matalon or Courtney Banghart, since I've been doing this every single podcast, you hear me very clearly and you hear them, or you in this case, softly, and it was something that we've been able to correct. So hopefully the sound will be better now.
Yeah, I haven't heard any complaints, honestly. So
let's talk a little bit about the last week. So you guys played in the NCAA tournament. You beat Syracuse in what was a great game, winning that game in overtime, and then lost to Boston College. And we want to get into a couple of subjects, but let's talk about the games themselves on the field. Let's start with the game against Syracuse. Clearly, you and Syracuse are evenly matched because you've now played 2 one-goal games. And, I believe if you add it together, each team scored 28 goals in the two games. So knowing that you're fairly evenly matched with them, as you're ahead or they're ahead, I mean, I'm sure your sense is that this one's coming down to the wire. It's about executing at the end.
Yeah, it absolutely was. I mean, there were two very different halves. We got out to a great start, and we're leading by a pretty large margin in the first half. But Syracuse was able to score a couple at the end of the half and make it a little closer. And then they came out on fire in the second half. And, you know, we're really putting our defense under some pressure. Scored a few goals to tie it up towards the end of that second half. And then it was really just a matter of, you know, who was going to score in the overtime. And that was just such an interesting overtime. I mean, in the era of sudden victory, you wouldn't think a game would get to 9 minutes of overtime before a goal has been scored.
I would think that, you know, just going back to, I think it was 8-2 at one point in the first half, right?
Yeah.
So what's your sense there? So, like, one of the things I like about doing these podcasts is that people watch games. I watch games.
Yeah.
And you think of them from the perspective of a fan, or you think of it from your own perspectives. But just to, like, as a coach, what are you thinking when you're getting ahead like that? That, you know, this game's going to be close at the end, or maybe this?
No, I'm thinking that it's a great day for us, and we got off to a really good start, which is what we wanted to do. We didn't do that in the first game against Syracuse. We really got ourselves in a hole, and we had to dig out of it the entire game and just, you know, fell one goal short. So we knew we wanted to get off to a good start. And let's face it, we've been playing well lately, you know, and I think we were a very different team than the first time around, but so is Syracuse. You know, and come NCAA tournament, everybody's going to bring their best game. So although we got out to a great start, and part of you is thinking, wow, we could have an awesome day here. But then there's also the voice in your head that knows that this is a great Syracuse team who can put up a lot of goals. And, you know, we just have to be ready. Our goal coming out of halftime was to win the second half. And that didn't quite happen, which is what allowed them to tie it up. But, you know, we knew that we just couldn't rest on the lead that we had.
But they went ahead also. So
they did.
So
they
a lot
did.
Of times in a situation like that where you have a big lead, you give it away.
Yeah.
It's when the other team takes the lead.
Yeah.
And if we go back to you didn't have a big lead over Penn in the Ivy tournament championship game, but you had the lead and they tied it 7 times, but never took the lead. And
it's
you said last week that that's a big psychological thing. This time Syracuse took the lead.
Yeah.
Then what are you thinking?
Well, then I'm thinking, okay, now we have to respond. And I had a lot of faith in our kids at that point that we'd be able to, you know, to get a goal. And we've come back at different points in the season, and we have a lot of firepower on attack. And at that point, you just have to win draws, and you've got to make plays on the field, whether it's in your defense, your midfield, or your attack, or certainly in the goal. And we were able to do that to give ourselves a chance to win.
And then let's go through the overtimes then. Until it ended with Colby Chan and Chuck's goal.
Yeah.
So it was you're right. I mean, you don't expect a game to go that long, but also it was back and forth. It wasn't like one team got the ball, held it, and tried to take the last shot.
Yeah.
We can't do it in the 90-second clock, but it wasn't like somebody just sat on the ball. I mean, it was up and down the field.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Syracuse played us differently this time out. First time out, they played us in a man defense, and they were face guarding Kyla Sears, and this time out, they went into their zone. And, you know, early in the game, we were able to get a few fast break goals, which really kind of blew that open for us. And then they really packed it in into their zone, and we had some trouble finding opportunities in the second half. And so we knew we were going to have to find some openings if we were going to win the game. And it was just a crazy overtime. And that with the sudden victory, every time you have the ball, you think, okay, we're going to end it now. We're going to score. And then every time you don't, you're like, oh my God, they're going to end it at their end. They're going to have a chance to score. So, you know, it was that way. It was back and forth, up and down. And, you know, just hoping for the best when it was on our D end. And, you know, our D has been tough all season long. As young and inexperienced as we were on defense, they've really, you know, really were tough and very stingy. And then Sam Fish made some great saves in overtime. Some of their kids forced a couple of things, you know, and finally we were able to get the opening for Colby.
So that puts you into the second round now. You're taking on Boston College. And to me, I understand seeding criteria, but it's hard to have a tournament where the number one team in the country all year and the unanimous number one in the polls, who's Stony Brook, is the fifth seed. And, you know, I mean, ask Penn. They ran into, you know,
yeah,
the number one seed when it was should have been the five seed. But to me, Boston College and Stony Brook, which is now a quarterfinal game, could have been the national championship game. And they're 40-1 between them.
Yeah.
I understand how seedings work, and I'm positive that you've been part of NCAA seedings in your life.
Yeah,
correct?
Absolutely.
But as it all plays out, you end up with situations like that sometimes. So now you're playing the number four seed, who didn't have to play a game the day before, and they could have been the number one seed, and game was pretty close. I mean, you put some pressure on them in the second half.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you want to win, obviously, and you want to advance, but I have to feel that you were pretty happy with the performance that your team had.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tough situation, and certainly, as it should be, the tournament is set up to give a big advantage to the top six seeds that get byes in the first round. So when you've had to play a double overtime game on Friday night and then come out and play again on Sunday at one, it's a quick turnaround for your team. I'm playing playing an opponent that we hadn't faced. We've never played them in a regular season game, to my recollection, here at Princeton. So it was definitely a tall order, but our team was really excited for it and eager for the opportunity to see what we could do. I mean, we had that great performance against Maryland about a month ago, and holding, you know, playing a one goal game with them and leading all game. And we thought if we could put our best game out on the field, that we had a good chance of winning that game.
And that sets up the Boston College Stony Brook game. And not only do you have the four and the five seeds, who could have been the one and the two seeds, but you also have, presumably, I don't know, but I'm assuming that they have chips on their shoulders about the seeding. So now you have what could be the greatest quarterfinal game ever.
Seriously. And you have two of the top players in the country this season, and Kylie Allmiller for Stony Brook and Sam Apuzzo for Boston College, who we did a fantastic job on in that game. I mean, we shut down their two top kids, Arsenal and Apuzzo. I mean, we really controlled them. Apuzzo had one goal, although she did have 11 draws, which were significant in that game. But some of their, you know, their third scorer, their fifth best scorer, they came out with, you know, some great five-goal performances.
So your season ends with another Ivy League championship, another Ivy League tournament championship. I mean, clearly the goal every year is to get to the Final Four and win it. But, you know, do you give the season a grade, or do you not do things like that?
I don't know if I give it a grade. I really do think it was a great season for
especially
us.
Especially considering that you lost first-team All-America goalie, first-team and the all-time leading scorer in the history of the program.
Yeah, and three other kids who were all Ivy players for us and really strong parts of our program, leaders for 4 years. So, you know, we had a lot to replace, and we had as many as five freshmen in the starting lineup routinely throughout the year. So, I mean, it was we had a tall order in front of us this year, and we started out the season pretty slow, 4-4, you know, losing to Virginia and Loyola and Syracuse and Dartmouth in there. But I really think that Syracuse game was a turning point for us. We played the best half of our season in the second half in that game. And from there on, we really springboarded to the great end of the season. So I'm just really...
Only two losses after that, one by one goal to Maryland, who actually is the number one seed, and then the one to Boston College in the tournament.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, as a coach, it's hard to look back on that and not be satisfied and happy with the season and happy for the players and the way they were able to turn things around and perform at a really high level throughout, you know, the last half of the season.
So you'll return your top three goal scorers, 43-plus goals by each of them. Sears, George, and Dorsey. But that's for a little bit down the road. Let's talk a little bit about the seniors who won't be back. I believe six of them.
Yes, we graduate 6 seniors. You know, and this class has just been so great for us in so many different ways. First, the leadership of our captains has been tremendous. You get a kid like Camille Sullivan, who has as tough as they come, our midi, and just gets it done in the weight room, in conditioning, constantly pushing her teammates on the field. I mean, she's been a leader by example and a vocal leader for a number of years now, and I thought did a phenomenal job of really leading this group. And then you have Abby Finkelston, who was last year's winner of the Yardley Love One Love Unsung Hero Award, who has played 10 minutes in the last 2 years and was voted captain by her teammates. And, you know, she was so much the driving force behind, she and Camille, behind what we were able to accomplish this year. A tremendous leader. She ran our sub box for us this year. You know, she had a big role on the team, was such a voice at practice, constantly, you know, pushing the team to try and compete at a higher level and to execute well. And the two of them together were just a phenomenal captain group. And then, you know, backed up by the entire senior class. And, you know, we had a lot of different kids playing a lot of different roles within that class. And you need that every year. I mean, not every kid in a class is going to be a star, is going to be an all-Ivy performer, an all-American candidate. You need kids who are going to be kids who earn playing time and kids who show everybody else what it means to be a Princeton lacrosse player and how to handle, you know, playing time situations that you may not, you know, you may not really be happy with, or you had anticipated a different role for yourself. But the class as a whole, every single one of them, they really embrace the team. They have helped develop just a fabulous and winning culture at Princeton. I couldn't be prouder of all of them for what they've helped this program accomplish over the last 4 years.
So my experience with coaches is the season ends and the next day they want to start the next season.
Seriously.
And then 3 days after that, they don't want to start the next season. They want to like take some time to recharge. But it's always the day after you're like, all right, I want to get going already. Like, what's it like for you?
Well, you know, it's interesting being a spring sport because the end of the season just coincides with the end of the school year. So, you know, we get home at 11 o'clock on Sunday night from BC. And the next day we're in the office first thing in the morning working all day long. We have our banquet Tuesday night. So Tuesday, we're working all day for that. And now we move into our individual player conferences Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Like, this week is pretty much a grind week for the coaching staff, just like it is for the players who are in exams. I mean, everything from locker room, you know, clean out to captain selections for the coming year. I mean, there's just a lot of, you know, to-dos that come with the end of the school year. So as it's always tough. And the end of a season is always a little bit of a, you know, feeling of loss and mourning for, you know, the experiences and the team that will no longer be, right? But then there's the excitement for next year. But I think for our staff right now, we're really focused on finishing up what we need to finish up with this team, having the discussions with the players that will set the stage for the success that we have next year.
You know, we talked about this a little bit about, you know, coaches like you or Fred Samara or Bill Tierney and how the fire burns after all the years of doing it. You know, when you get to this time of year, you personally, are you missing the fact that there's not another game to coach this year? And,
you know, I think you always miss that when the season ends. But like I said, you know, I don't have regrets about this season. I don't think we played our very best game in the last game, but, you know, I know our kids played their hearts out. They competed from start to finish. And that's what, you know, you accept that. And so I'm okay with how the season ended. Yeah, you always want to get that one more. Would love to get back to the Final Four, and maybe next year will be the year that we do it. But I think with age, you also gain a perspective. And you really can appreciate, you know, everything that we do accomplish and know that there's only, I told the kids right after the game against Syracuse, there's only one team. When you're a good team and you make the NCAA tournament, every team is going home sad and unhappy except one, you know, and that's just the reality of tournament time. So
that's sort of what's strange about the men's team, because they didn't make the Ivy tournament there. They went into the offseason with a 5-game winning streak.
Absolutely.
Which, you know,
it's pretty darn good.
Right. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You assume that the NCAA champion, but it, like, if Yale runs the table in the NCAA men's tournament and wins, they lost the Ivy final. They won't even have a five-game winning streak. So that's a rarity. Wow. And one thing I wanted to bring up about related to the men's game is, so the men, I assume, are going to go to a shot clock next year. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking 75 seconds is what they're going to come up with. What advice would you give to them if they said to you about maybe unintended consequences of a shot clock in the women's game, or the intent or the positives of the shot clock?
Well, we may need to stretch the time between our games and doubleheaders, because one thing that you've definitely seen for sure is the length of the game has increased. Games routinely now are at least 2 hours and as many as 2.5 hours in a regulation game, just because there are so many goals scored and with a time stoppage after goals.
You know what's really interesting? I don't mean to cut you off, but so I was doing the stats for the Ivy tournament, and when you got the 10-goal lead against Columbia and the clock ran, you saw how much time elapses between when the goal is scored and when the next draw happens.
Yeah.
And when you multiply, when the clock is running, time is moving. But when the clock is stopped after it is 99% of the time, it shows you how much that adds to the length of a game.
Yeah, it really does. And it's, routine for teams to be scoring in the range of 15 goals, give or take five, every game. So it's a lot of additional time that's added. And, I mean, that time has always been there, but you haven't had, every game being such of a high-scoring affair. And also, I think in our sport, there were just so many rule changes that were put in this year and last year that there was extra time taken off for referee conferencing and, especially at the beginning of the year, just trying to get things right. But hopefully our rules committee, and this is not a big rules change year for us, so hopefully our rules committee will take a hiatus from changing anything else in the game. I honestly am not sure of what else could possibly be changed at this point. So that could help a little bit next year.
So, I mean, you mentioned rules in women's lacrosse, and that's been a big thing because the rules have changed so dramatically across the board. Do you think that, I've always kind of wondered this, but do you think, like, players, coaches, everybody is as in tune to what the rules actually are? Or do you think that there's a lot of situations that come up where even people on the field are like, I didn't realize that was a rule? And I think because, you do see so many referee conferences, and if they're confused, then everybody's confused.
I think there's sometimes confusion in terms of, let's say you have a foul that's a yellow card and you have a foul that's not a yellow card, but they're still offsetting fouls, like how the offsetting fouls are called and the alternating change of possession. There have been a lot of issues with subs coming in from the box and are they in too early or not, and we don't have a table official. I think that's going to be a discussion in the future. Should we add a fourth official to our game? I think over the course of the season, the coaches, the officials, and the players really did adjust to most of the rule changes, but inevitably we see things differently.
One thing I would say happens. Is the one thing I would say that's sort of like, if you get a yellow card, now that's a 2-minute extra man opportunity, but it's a 90-second clock.
Yeah.
And I would just, the one thing I would do is I would say in the case of a yellow card, you have the full 2 minutes to possess the ball.
I don't know how that will, if that will happen. You'd have to put 120 seconds on the shot clock. I don't really see that happening. And maybe they change the yellow card to 90 seconds. Who knows?
Well, that would work too.
Could work too.
It's a very interesting dynamic when you have the extra person on the field and then you have to turn the ball over.
Yeah, and you have to do some math as a coach. How much time is left on the shot clock and how much time is on the card? And yeah.
So summer for you is recruiting, camps, vacations, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, the other thing about the spring sport is you really do go right into the recruiting season. So we really look forward to some time in August where we can really shut things down for a little bit and take an extended break. But until then, we'll grab days here and there when we can as a staff to try and just relax and really recover. I think the one thing I've found as I get older, it takes a little more out of you. But
sitting on fields all day in 90
maybe
degree
sitting
weather.
I mean just the season as the season.
No,
as,
I meant the recruiting piece in the summer.
Oh, the recruiting piece. The recruiting piece is what the recruiting piece is. I don't mind it. I generally can focus out there, and it's nice that it's just on the weekends and not, every day of the week. But it is, it's a lot, there's no doubt.
So what we should do is we should do a couple of these in the summer.
Sure.
Just to talk a little bit about, you know, how things are going and what, you know, what it's like. I mean, I think one of the great things about this is it does give the perspective of what the coach is actually thinking. And I think a lot of people think they know what a coach is thinking or what goes into coaching, and they don't necessarily know that. So maybe we can do one or two in the summer, and we'll do a couple in the fall, and then we'll come back next year and do them weekly.
Sounds great.
With one issue, which is
the name.
The name. So I'm fine with the Chris Saylor Show, but you said that you've been getting a lot of feedback from people. So I think like we'll give your alums and your friends and everybody else the summer to think about if they have a better name than just the Chris Saylor Show, and if they do, they should let us know.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay, so we'll reconvene at some point in the summer, and it was a great year for your team. It was you know, anytime you have another Ivy League championship and an Ivy tournament championship, and one thing we should mention is your seniors graduate with 4 Ivy titles in 4 years, and that's an extraordinary accomplishment.
Yeah, and 3 Ivy tournament championships, which isn't bad either.
And it's there's only 2 teams at Princeton who won the Ivy championship all 4 years for the class of 2018. The other is the men's indoor track and field team. So it's an extraordinary accomplishment for them, and we congratulate them, and we thank you for being with us here the last couple of weeks. It's been really good.
Thanks, Jerry.
So for Chris Saylor, I'm Jerry Price, and thank you for listening again to The Chris Saylor Show. We'll be back in the summer a couple of times, so we'll let you know when we do that, and keep a lookout for that, and we'll be back next year with more of these. But again, once again, thank you for your support of Princeton Women's Lacrosse.